Hi, I'm Robin Campbell.
And I'm Matt Doyle.
We're UB40. You're listening to Life Minute.
Reggae pop legends UB40 are celebrating their 45th anniversary with a summer tour and a new album, UB45, filled with new songs and reworked classics. We sat down with the band's co-founder, guitarist, and vocalist Robin Campbell and lead singer Matt Doyle to hear all about it. This is a Life Minute with UB40.
So tell us a little bit about the tour and what fans can expect.
Well, pretty much the same as I would expect any time they come to a UB40 show. We play the classics, you know, the ones that the fans expect to hear, the ones they've come to hear, the favourites. But we also try and introduce a few new tracks off the new album, plus bring back a few maybe they haven't heard for a while, and basically just mix it up, but always have a good time, always have a party set so people are there to enjoy themselves and sing along and dance along.
You know, the same electrifying show that the guys have always put on. Now we've got
electrifying.
Yeah, I like to use that word, electrifying. And brand new songs off the new album that a lot of people might not have heard before if they haven't picked up the album yet. So it's exciting. It's good to see people's reactions when they hear these songs.
We are celebrating 45 years. Mm-hmm. You know, that part of that celebration is the album. So obviously, we will be playing the old tracks that are on the album, but we also want to play the new tracks, you know, and introduce and get the seal of approval from the fans.
What does this tour mean to each one of you?
I think I just said it, really. It's a, you know, it's a celebration of 45 years of being UB40, which is, I still kind of pinch myself on a regular basis because I can't quite believe this is the life I've had, you know, and I'm still living it.
For me, it's only my second time in the States, really. And the first tour, it was just taking everything in and coming to places like this and seeing places that you've only really seen on the television. The first time around, it was quite daunting. But this time, I'm just taking it all in. Went for a nice stroll to Central Park and just seeing people, you know, out enjoying the sunshine and stuff like that. It's beautiful. It's more of that, really. See the country, meet new people, play to new fans.
And then what are each of your favourite songs to perform?
I think it changes with the country you're in, you know. As a regular thing anyway, it changes from week to week, you know. Sometimes I enjoy playing old ones, sometimes I enjoy playing brand new ones, you know. My favourite track on the new album is a track called Home, and I really enjoy playing that, so I can't wait to play that live. But of course, playing old classics like Kingston Town and Red Red Wine, and those songs kind of come into their own in a live situation because the audience responds to them so well. And to have thousands of people singing your songs back at you, you know, it's a wonderful buzz. So picking one favourite is very difficult.
Yeah, it does change all the time, depending where you are. Like you said, I'm really excited to play Home, one of the new songs off our new album. Yeah, it just changes all the time. I've always loved singing Kingston Town, even since I was a kid. So every time I get to sing that one, it brings back memories.
You both mentioned the new album. Tell us a little bit about the process of putting that together.
Well, it's obviously a celebration of 45 years, which is why it's called UB45. But there were two main things. We wanted to do some new material with Matt, our new vocalist, who's only been with us for 3 years. We've also got a new keyboard player. My son Matt is singing backing vocals with the band now as well. And we have rapper Gilly G with us. It's great doing new material, but we also wanted to show people how well Matt fits into our sound, you know, and how good he sounds singing those old songs like Kingston Town and Red Red Wine. The songs that he grew up on, you know. Yeah, and the fans have been telling us since Matt's been with us how good he sounds singing those old songs. So we thought it'd be a great idea to split the album in half and re-record some of those old classics with obviously Matt singing the lead vocal, just to show people who may not have been to see us live how good he sounds singing those songs, you know. Yeah, so there's that half of the album and the other half of brand new material, which Matt has also contributed to with writing lyrics. Yeah, that's principally what it's all about.
Matt, you've only been with the band for about 3 years now. How do you feel that you have grown since joining the band and how your performance is different this time around?
Yeah, my ego's grown ridiculously. I had to bring an extra suitcase for it this time. I feel like I'm growing in confidence more and more, you know, every time I step out on stage with the guys. And it's that confidence that they've really kind of, you know, driven into me and nourished, really. You know, not that I was ever particularly nervous about being on stage, but certainly the first few times being in front of a crowd that size, you know, being on a stage with guys that have been doing it for 45 years, you know, it was pretty scary at first. But now I'm just trying to just take it all in my stride and enjoy every moment of it.
And did you feel like you had big shoes to fill replacing Duncan?
Yeah, I did feel like I had big shoes to fill, but, you know, just from being on tour with the guys and watching them every night, watching Duncan, and just learning, really. Like, I didn't realise I was learning for the future, but, you know, watching what Duncan would do and how he'd get the crowd involved and things like that. And yeah, I'm just glad that they kind of, you know, chose me to fill the shoes, really.
You mentioned iconic hits that you have, specifically Red Red Wine. Could you tell us a little bit about the story behind that song and how it came together?
Well, I think everybody now knows that it's a Neil Diamond song. When we recorded it, we had no idea it was a Neil Diamond song. We didn't know the Neil Diamond version. I was aware of two versions. One was the reggae version by a guy called Tony Tribe, who was a Jamaican living in England. And I believe that he did a cover of the version he knew was by Jimmy James and the Vagabonds. Jimmy James is another Jamaican guy who was living in England, but he was doing R&B, and he did an R&B version of Red Red Wine. So the two versions I knew were Jimmy James and Tony Tribe's version, an R&B version and a reggae version. And those were the two that I knew and the two that we were covering as far as I was concerned. But it wasn't until we'd finished the recording and for publishing reasons, we found out that the owner of the song was Neil Diamond. That was the first time we knew about it. So it's kind of interesting.
Have you ever talked to Neil about?
No, and he's never even been in touch and thanked us for giving him a number one in 30 countries.
And then also Can't Help Falling in Love. Tell us a little bit about that one as well.
Well, that was a song that we didn't actually choose. We were asked to do that for a movie called Honeymoon in Vegas, starring Nicolas Cage. The soundtrack of the movie is all Elvis tunes. They asked us specifically if we would do a version of Can't Help Falling, which we did. But in our usual style, we took so long to do it that when we delivered it to them, they said, oh, sorry, we've finished the film now and we've done the production and we've used somebody else's version. And as it happened, they'd also asked Bono to do a version and they used his in the film. So the song then sat on the shelf for 6 months or so. And then another film got in touch and said that they heard the tune and they would love to do it, use it in their movie. And it was the Sharon Stone movie, Sliver. So they asked us if they could use it. We said, of course. And then it got released. We put it on the next album. And again, that one went to number one all over the place, including America, you know, so complete surprise to us. We did know that that was an Elvis tune, obviously.
And continuing with throwbacks, how did the band first get together 45 years ago?
We didn't get together 45 years ago. We've all known each other since we were kids. The founding members, the original six guys that put the band together, we've known each other since, I've known all of them since they were 10, 11 years old, and some of them even younger. Our percussionist, Norman Hassan, I think I've known him since he was six. You know. So we've grown up together. We've gone to youth clubs, walked the parks, the streets, the coffee bars, you know, and then when we were older, clubs and parties, etc. So we grew up listening to the same music. We grew up on the same streets. And when reggae happened in the late 60s, that was the soundtrack to our lives, you know. That's what we were listening to and what we were in love with. When we talked about forming a band for years, since we were kids, especially myself and my brothers, we sung together since we were kids. We'd done three-part harmonising, you know, we thought we'd be the Bee Gees or the Jacksons or somebody. And then reggae happened and we, you know, that's all we ever talked about was forming a reggae band. And then we saw Bob Marley play our hometown in Birmingham in 1978, and that was really the catalyst. That was the thing that made us decide, okay, we're going to stop talking about it and do it, you know, and form a band. And that was what we did.
And Matt, what drew you to reggae?
UB40. from day one, my earliest memories of music is UB40, and just being sat in the back of my parents' car, going on a trip to, I don't know, like down south, down to Devon or somewhere like that, and just listening to a mixtape and that my mum or my dad might have thrown together, and 90% of it is UB40. You know, once that's done, flip it over, put it back in, next side, and play it again. And
he also comes from Birmingham. So,
yeah, I come from Birmingham.
So you know, he grew up
everywhere.
In the same musical scene that we did.
Yeah.
And reggae's massive in Birmingham.
And other people, you know, like, I don't know, Dennis Brown, Ken Booth, you know, John Holt, Steel Pulse, who I didn't really get into till kind of maybe in my teenage years. But yeah, I think UB40 just got my attention straight away I've been a fan of reggae ever since.
And so this must be a really big moment for you, but yeah. Also your loved ones, how do they feel about this moment for you, being a part of the band now?
They're just over the moon. They're so proud of me. It's really beautiful, you know, going to family parties and things like that, and people just coming over and saying, congratulations, you know, we've seen how hard you've worked over the years, and, you know, bouncing from job to job, trying to make a career out of music while trying to, you know, pay rent and things like that. Yeah, it just means everything to me. You know, I'm living my dream now.
And what would you tell your younger self that loved UB40?
Just keep doing what you're doing. Don't doubt yourself. Yeah, that's it.
So what's next for the band after the tour?
More of the same, really. We don't intend to slow down or stop, you know. We tour constantly. We are a touring band and have been since we started in the 80s. And every couple of years we make a record. So when we finish touring, we get in the studio and we work on new material. And as soon as we finish the album, we're back out on the road again, you know. And that's kind of the cycle that we've been doing for 45 years. It's what we love, you know. As I say, we still pinch ourselves that we've got this life, you know. And it's an immensely privileged life that we lead, you know, because not everybody gets to do what they love for a living, and we still do, you know. So we'll do it for as long as possible, gathering new, young talent, you know, talented people, and their enthusiasm rubs off on us and keeps us young or feeling young. You know, it's something we love doing, and we don't have any plans to slow down at all. Not immediately, anyway. We intend to bop till we drop, so to speak.
What bands and artists are both of you currently listening to in your free time?
Well, that's a difficult one. I love listening to old stuff all the time. I'm still listening to the reggae that I grew up on, you know, the stuff that turned me on in my teenage years, I still play on a regular basis. But I listen to new stuff all the time. I just can never think of anybody's name. House of Shem, I like, who are a New Zealand reggae band. I really enjoy their stuff. We've played with them a number of times. They're friends of ours, and I love the music they're making. There are lots of artists from Jamaica that I'm into, that I listen to. Quebecca Pyramid is one of them. But there's many, you know. I'm dreadful at remembering names, especially when you put me on a spot like that. I should have a list, really, that I could wheel out for you, but I haven't.
Yeah, it is a tough one. Loads of New Zealand reggae I'm starting to really fall in love with. After hearing House of Shem play with, you know, do the collaboration, I just really started delving into reggae from that part of the world, and there's loads of really good bands, way too many that I probably couldn't name now, but... And Jamaican artists as well, you know, Coffee, Lila Ike, and yeah, just I love old stuff as well. I love old stuff. I've just rekindled my love for Patsy Cline. Love Patsy Cline. Don't know why, just love her.
And what inspires both of you, both in performing and recording?
Well, other than the fact that we were totally inspired by Marley, by the live performance that we saw of Marley in the 70s, I don't really gain inspiration from other live artists. I just gain inspiration from what we as a band do, you know, and have achieved. I'm constantly amazed by how good the guys are in the band that I'm in, you know, and how good a band is, you know. that constantly amazes me and constantly surprises me and infuses me all the time. You know, I find what my bandmates do inspiring rather than what other artists do. I bring a song to the band. I watch it take shape, you know, in front of my eyes when the drum and bass guys take over and they give it a backbone, you know, that it didn't have before. And then the keyboard guy comes in and then we lay horn lines over it and stuff. And all of that I find totally inspiring. And by the time we've finished an album, I'm pumped up, you know, and I really want to get out and play it and get the stamp of approval from the fans, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, like one of the songs on the new album, Say Nothing, that was inspired by Gilly. So it was written by Norman. Yeah, just one thing that he kept saying, say nothing, say nothing. And then it sparked an idea in Norman's head and he's written this incredible tune that's, you know, in my eyes, definitely one of the best on the album. So taking inspiration from, you know, the people around you, your bandmates, and just what's going on in the world, really. Which sometimes it's quite depressing, but sometimes it's good as well. You know, there's lots of good stuff happening in the world as well.
And you guys seem to work so well together. What is your favourite part of the creative process when working together as a band?
Well, as I say, you know, I create on my own. I write lyrics, you know, and I might have a melody. But for me, it's when you bring something to the band and everybody else gets involved. And you have to, you can't be too precious about what you've done. You have to let it go. And let the other guys do their thing with it, you know, and you have to trust in what they're going to do. The creative process is what makes the end result a UB40 tune, you know. And I think if you get too precious about it and too possessive about the stuff that you've created, then you're only ever going to disappoint yourself. What you have to do is just be completely open to what everybody else does, and the creative process, That's part of being in a really good band, you know. When you know the band's good and you trust the guys in the band to do their thing, that's the joy of, you know, the end result.
And what do you guys think music does for people?
It's the soundtrack to their lives, you know. I think it's different for everybody. Everybody loves music, but why and what they get from it is always different, you know. Some people, the lyrics are massively important. Other people don't care what the lyrics are, you know. And that's fine with me, whatever turns you on, you know, as long as you're liking it, as long as you love what we do, then that's all that matters to me.
Yeah, some people delve into the lyrics and, you know, and some people just want to dance, and either way, it's great. If you want songs to make you cry or make you laugh, or if you just want to have a party, you know, that's what music does.
Yeah,
brings people
when,
together.
When we write our own lyrics, it's important that we write about things that are important to us, you know, things that fire us up or upset us or, you know, yeah, inspire us, whatever. It's important to write about, you know, what you want to write about. But in the end, it's really only about music. And, you know, music isn't going to change the world. It's just the soundtrack to people's lives. And, you know, as long as they're enjoying the music, in the end, when you come to a show, it's about having a good time. It's about dancing and singing and enjoying yourself, you know. And really, the lyrics are secondary, even though when you write them, they're of the utmost importance, you know, because you feel you've got something to say and you want to say it. But that's a personal thing, you know. The appreciation of music is all about dancing and singing along and enjoying yourself, for me.
And you guys have talked a lot about writing and performing. What do you like to do when you're not working?
Very little, because we are a hard-working band and we tend to veg out, don't we, when we get home? We tend to do as little as possible, you know. I mean, I like to play snooker, which is, you know, the grown-up version of pool that Americans aren't very familiar with, but it's got more balls and a bigger table. When we finished working, what we tend to do is as little as possible, just because we do work hard, you know, and when we're on the road, it can be exhausting. And really, when you get home or when you get time off, all you want to do is recharge your batteries, you know.
Sometimes that is just recharging your batteries is just sitting down, putting on your favourite program, you know, binge watching anything. It's all feeding your unconscious mind. It's all work, really. You know, all that's going in, you're going to write something about it maybe one day.
Just hang out with your family.
Yeah, exactly.
And other friends. You know, we tend not to see a lot of each other when we're on time off, because we see so much, we live in each other's pockets all the time, you know. So when you get home, it tends to be hang out with your family. It's nice to see other people, you know, just for a while, just to recharge.
And now that you guys are on tour, what is one thing that you never travel without?
my really nerdy one is a Rubik's Cube.
He's a proper Rubik's Cube nerd.
Yeah, I got a bit obsessed during lockdown, and it went from learning how to do it and then doing it with one hand and the other hand. But yeah, I wish there was something a lot more cool than that to say.
I like the phone. I like the fact that you can keep in touch on Facebook and, you know, Instagram and all that kind of stuff. Also play ridiculous amounts of Sudoku to a very high standard.
All right, and since we're Life Minute TV, what is your best life advice?
Do what you love doing, whether it's work or pleasure. Always do what you love doing so that you can deal with all the other stuff.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'd say.
Yeah. Make time for what you love, whether it's a thing or people, make time for it, and that gives you the ability to deal with the rest.
Could each of you just share one of your most memorable moments that you have within your career, whether it's with the band or personally?
Mine will always be Hollywood Bowl, probably.
He's now known as Matt Hollywood Doyle because he came of age at the Hollywood Bowl. The last time we came to America, he was saying to you that he was nervous when he first started, but we believe that he came of age on that show because he turned into a consummate performer, walked out into the audience and serenaded everybody. And he became known as Matt Hollywood Doyle from that point, didn't you?
Yeah, yeah. And again, it's just a place I've always seen on TV and always just thought it'd be amazing to play there.
It's such an iconic venue, you know, to play there. Yeah, it was a major moment for him and for us, of course, but we've done it a few times over the years. But there's just so many moments, you know, in a career as long as ours, so many moments. One of the greatest things was playing South Africa when Mandela was out and president, out of prison and president, and apartheid was no longer outlawed. And we were invited to go and play in South Africa, having had our music banned in South Africa throughout the 80s, to then go in the 90s as invited guests, you know, and we still hold the live record in South Africa. We play to 70,000 people a night. And to have them sing our songs back to us, the songs that had been banned in that country, to have the whole audience singing those songs back to us, that was a real goosebump moment for me and one I'll never forget.
How do audiences differ depending on where you are, what country you're in?
They don't differ that much. But different songs have different amounts of success, different degrees of success, you know, in different countries. So sometimes you can be playing a song that gets a good reaction in one place, but then you go to another country and it gets a crazy reaction and you suddenly realise, oh yeah, it was number one here. You know, it varies slightly, but really audiences are pretty much the same wherever they are, especially for our music, you know. We have a very vocal audience that dances and sings. We hate sit-down venues, you know. And if it is a sit-down venue, we get people up, you know. We don't like them staying in their seats. So, yeah, I mean, we pretty much have a singing, dancing audience wherever we are. And a loud audience that responds, you know, a responsive, loud, singing audience. That's what we want everywhere we go, and it's pretty much what we get.
Yeah.
That was that Hollywood Bowl performance. Was that a singing, dancing audience as well?
Oh yeah.
Oh, for sure.
Oh yeah, definitely. I mean, you had, you know, you kind of
VIPs all sitting down still.
Yeah, but we always managed to get them up and dancing. Yeah, they don't stay on the butts for long.
To see more of this interview, visit our website lifeminute.tv, and don't forget to subscribe to our podcast Life Minute TV.